Morning. All right, we'll try that one more time. Good morning. That's going out fun. So welcome to the Sales Impact Summit. Hopefully you guys are all in the right room. This is the 9:55 flight to Forrester. So thanks for joining us. Couple things housekeeping before we get started. Introduce Mary. We have sessions throughout. I think as Andrew talked about at the beginning of the keynote. You can come in and out of these sessions, go to other sessions. We do, if you look at the agenda, have some great sales enablement, sales impact sessions for today and tomorrow. So hopefully you spend a lot of good time with us. Please use the hashtag B2BMX as much as desired throughout the couple sessions. And slides, I think for most of the slides we have today, tomorrow they'll all be available on the app and online as well. I'm really pleased to introduce Mary Shea from Forrester. She's going to talk about some great new research. I took a look at her deck earlier. Lots of great insights, a lot of tweetable moments. They didn't really give me very good stuff to introduce speakers, so I had to do my own Google research. You go do a Google search on anybody, you find out some amazing things. So we have to. From this point forward, Mary, we're just going to refer to you as Doctor. Mary has a doctorate in music. She also has a master's in oboe performance. I'm very disappointed there's no oboe here. You're a triathlete and an analyst and a doctor and a master's oboe. So now that we all feel terrible about ourselves, please welcome to the stage Mary Shea.
What's you plan to do with your foolish pride when you're all by yourself?
Wow, I hope I can live up to that introduction. Thank you very much. It's so great to meet you in person. It's great to be here today and appreciate the warm welcome. I'd like to thank my boss, Peter, for all the buildup with the tweets. From Germany. That's what happens when a six-year-old tries to be a millennial. Anyway, thank you, Peter. So I like to call the sales and marketing alignment topic the topic that just keeps on giving. You know, we've been talking about it for years now, but there's some real urgency to get it right. And so for the next 30 minutes or so, I'm gonna share with you why it's becoming more and more critical for sales and marketing organizations and teams to collaborate in new, innovative, and more creative ways than they've ever done before. And I'm going to share with you some recommendations that you can take back to your own companies as you work to lead and bring these teams together on behalf of your buyers, not only today, but in the future. So before we get started, I'd love to just do a quick poll of the audience and get a sense of how do you align yourself? Are the folks here mostly sales or marketing? So who's in sales, just so I can get a sense? Okay, we've got a few people. Who's in marketing? Wow, okay. Who's other? All right, we'll talk later. So we're already two decades into the 21st century, and I'm really scratching my head around why are we still struggling with this age-old problem of marketing and sales alignment, right? You know, you think about the challenges. I actually Googled marketing and sales relationships before this session, and I came up with 98 million results. Ending the war between sales and marketing, what to do when the sales and marketing relationship has soured, and so on. Maybe many of you have had that experience, right? But if you think about it, that seminal article that Neil Rackham and colleagues wrote in 2006, Ending the War Between Sales and Marketing, we're still struggling today, a decade later, with some of those same issues. And so I was talking to some folks a little bit earlier today about the progress that's being made on the sales and marketing front. And I think there is some really good news. We're starting to see this in different surveys that we did last year, as well as one that's just off the press this quarter. And so at the C-suite, we're really starting to see much more alignment between sales and marketing in terms of compensation. 82% of the CMOs that we interviewed last year said that their variable compensation, the portion of their compensation that's variable, is actually aligned to revenue or profit goals. So I think that's really positive. And this research that we just fielded a couple of weeks ago shows that marketing and sales leaders are saying there's positive relationships, particularly in these earlier stage activities that you've seen here. Defining value propositions, identifying segments and key targets, and defining and executing field programs. Now the challenge with this is that these are all things that are a little bit difficult to kind of measure. We see relationships a little bit weaker in the latter stage of sales and marketing joint activities. And here you can see reporting is an issue, right? No surprise. And then as you start to think about access to customer and customer feedback, that's where the relationship gets a little bit challenged as well. And marketing and sales leaders are describing those relationships as weaker. It's not surprising that salespeople historically do want to defend the access to the customer. And this is also really shocking to me. 60% of marketing leads are not participating in sales pipeline reviews. Why is that? It's a really simple fix. You can start to add value, hear directly what's happening from the customer, and position yourself as a strategic partner to sales. The other thing that I see that is really troubling is that marketing and sales metrics are not tightly aligned, and you can see that here in this stat. I think these are really easy fixes and something that you can start to take back to your organization and have discussions about. It's not difficult to insert yourself into a pipeline review, and once you add value, they're going to invite you back more and more frequently. So Forrester has a theme, the age of the customer, and I know a lot of you are familiar with it. It's a 20-year business cycle in which the most innovative companies are reinventing themselves to serve an increasingly powerful set of customers. And so we're 5 years into the age of the customer, and the modern B2B buyer has really, really high expectations. You can see that these buyers are empowered. They have access to information, pricing, competitive, and they have the ability to transact whenever, wherever, and however they want. And so that's created some real challenges on the sales and marketing front. Now, in the B2B realm, we all make purchases in our own lives as well, right? We interact with some of our favorite brands, and so I wanted to share a couple of analogs that really show this concept of the consumerization of the B2B buyer, which we've all heard a lot about, right? So we have brands like Amazon or Nike or BMW, and the level of personalization that they provide to us, we want to now experience in the B2B world. So we expect our vendors to serve up proactive recommendations. We want references from peers, right? Not only about where to eat dinner at night, but what type of software we might want to bring into our firm. And all of this happens before we're probably even meeting with a salesperson. We want replenishment orders to show up automatically at our house. Anyone here use Amazon Dash? Am I the only one? You wish, right? Same thing happens if you're a farmer in Wisconsin and you want your stuff to show up for your tractor. You want it to show up automatically. With the Internet of Things, that's possible, right? And finally, we all turn to experts and advisors that we trust for advice. So you can see that there's a real connection and a blurring between the activities that we do in our personal lives and what we want to do in the business world. So for the sellers in this room, this is not new information, right? Your situation is becoming more and more challenging. And as marketers, you know, you usually focus on looking outside. But I start to see marketers as having to focus more and more on the sales enablement piece because it's becoming so challenging for sales to gain and sustain access to buyers. But this is not new data. You guys are familiar with it. This is kind of what sellers are up against, right? 92% of B2B buyers are going to start with search. 75% of them are going to go to social networks to acquire information about vendors. And 90% of senior executives are not going to take a call from someone they don't know. We've been hearing about this for some time, but this is actually hot off the press as well. There are even more complexities that your sellers need to deal with, right? I hear this all the time, and we just got this research back last week that shows when we asked sales and marketing leaders what were the top three challenges that their sellers were facing, more and more stakeholders into the buying process, an elongated sales cycle. Now imagine, as you get more and more millennials into the buying process as well, consensus building is going to be huge, and this is going to continue to be an issue for your sellers. So at Forrester, we look at the buyer's journey in three macro phases. So in this first phase, it's the discover and explore phase, and I'm calling this sort of the self-directed. Buyers actually want to acquire information and learn on their own, right? So they want to potentially do research off of their mobile devices, download digital content off a website, go to social networks and get feedback about vendors and other providers. And by a factor of 3 to 1, they don't want to talk to a salesperson, right? And particularly about offerings and product features and functions. So if you're a seller and you want to insert yourself into this phase, it needs to be very contextual and personal, and it needs to make sense with the other activities that your buyer's already engaged with. Now, in the ongoing education phase, so in the buy and use phase, this is where buyers want to really extend their understanding of the vendor landscape and figure out how they're going to solve their business problem or opportunity in a deeper manner. And so they do want to interact with marketing assets directly. And maybe they want to go to a vendor event, an industry event, or they want to bring a salesperson on to have a broad stakeholder meeting. So they are looking for some very discreet interactions here. And then finally, with the ask and the engage phase, the focus is really on adoption, user adoption, making sure that your customers are getting the most out of the product and service that they've purchased. And the focus here is on how do we extend the value of the relationship for both your market-facing team and the buyer. So maybe that is by engaging in co-creation and innovation with your customer so that they can have a more customized solution. And maybe it's enlisting them to be a customer advocate so that they can vocally support your brand. So what I'm finding by the research that I'm doing and the different conversations that I have in the marketplace is that buyers essentially want an insightful, data-driven, and dynamic interaction with their sales rep. So what we've seen is that buyers are saying, I want to learn something new from my seller. I want them to teach me something. I want them to have a data-driven discussion around how their product or service is going to measurably impact my business performance. And this last one, I think, is almost the most important piece, which is I want a rep who can flip on the fly and talk about what matters to me, not take me through some sort of static, seller-oriented, linear deck. That's over. So keep that in mind as you start to think about going to market and collaborating between sales and marketing. What our research is also showing is that buyers don't want to be sold to. And they essentially want a frictionless experience or a high-value interaction, and they don't want anything in between. And I actually call that the 2-star, 5-star experience, right? The other stars have their merits, but they often disappoint. I only stay at a 5-star or 2-star because I know exactly what I'm getting, and your buyers are like that, right? So let's talk a little bit about what this means for the modern B2B seller and how that role is changing and evolving as a result of what's happening with the buyer. I know Meredith's not here today, but we do have an Azalead executive, Stephanie, is with us. And I interviewed Meredith for the report that I did on marketing and sales alignment, and I thought he really summed it up well. He said, you know, in the past, it used to be the product that was the star of the show, right? You go in, you do a demo, features and functions, and the product sold itself. Well, now buyers are looking to really see that salesperson step up, own the meeting, add value, be an educator, teach them something new. And I think that's a real fundamental shift. So has anyone in this room happened to read the Forrester report, The Death of the B2B Salesman by Andy Hoare? A couple of people here, Jill and Matt, for sure. So this is a report that I call a purposely provocative titled report, and Andy wrote it about 2 years ago. And in it, he predicted that by 2020, the US sales force was going to contract by about 1 million as a result of the fact of how these new buyers want to engage digitally and are increasingly self-directed. Well, you know, my view is that the B2B salesperson is never going to go away, but that role is going to change pretty dramatically. So I do believe that the B2B seller is in need of a pretty significant reboot. And ways to do that are to be very, very collaborative with marketing and others. At Forrester, we have this framework that really looks at 4 typical sales archetypes. You may have your own at your own company. But what we like to do is really work with clients and help them understand the complexity of the purchasing experience, the complexity of the product and service that they're presenting, and then help them align the right types of sellers to the right types of customers. So we're not saying you can't have any order takers at your firm. You just need to make sure they're aligned to the right stack, right? So very, very quickly, for some of you who might not have read the report, explainers, those are the educators. Those are the folks that actually educate in what we call from inside out instead of outside in, which is optimal. They're the demo guys. They can tell you everything about features and functions. The order takers, we've all had the experience of interacting with the order taker. Those are the high velocity transactional sellers. They create urgency by discounting, right? And they deliver value by very, very quick turnaround of RFPs and other types of proposals and stuff. Again, it makes sense to have them. They just need to be on the right stack of business. Navigators are the folks that are really adept at networking in and around accounts, and they can tin cup, create ROI studies. They can tell you more about what's going on at your company than you know, actually, just by meeting them. And then this consultant, which we'll talk a little bit more about, is what I think is really the quintessential modern B2B seller of the future, and they embed themselves completely into your business. So some of the traits of the consultant are they're very technology savvy. They have the ability to do quantitative and qualitative analytics and deliver insights back to their clients. They have very strong business acumen. You know, 5-10 years ago, it was enough to know about the industry and the general company that you're talking to. Today, you need to understand all the different intricacies of the roles, how they're goaled, have empathy for the job, and really have strategic conversations. These consultants have the ability to communicate with C-level executives, with procurement, with legal, and everyone in between. And then, you know, finally, they're highly, highly collaborative. They understand that they can't be successful without collaborating with marketing, product, technology, and other areas within the business. So this now brings us to the new charter, which is something that is being driven by the buyer rather than the CEO. And this is the buyer is now demanding a higher level of collaboration and coordination between marketing or sales, or quite frankly, you're not going to survive. And so I really like to think about it as, you know, sort of this buyer-driven edict rather than a CEO-driven mandate. So to give you some thoughts around how you might start to drive a more collaborative marketing and sales relationship at your firms, I'm going to focus on three topic areas: personalization, account-based marketing, and social selling. And so as we get into this concept of personalization, maybe some of you, you know, can think about this. In the past, as sellers, it was always about the volume of information that you get out there, the number of leads that you could talk to, the number of conversions that you could have, the number of people that you could put into your pipeline. And now I think it's really about garnering attention to that right type of buyer with the messaging and the interactions that you have. And so just a couple of different ideas. You know, you need to be able to really understand your buyer before you have any type of engagement, regardless of what channel you're reaching out to them on. So has anyone used Charlie App here in this room? This is a screenshot of Charlie App. It automates the research process for the seller. And you can actually work with them and customize what you want to see at a contact or account level. And instead of having to go to 3 or 4 different sites to gather all the information before you make that call, send that email, you're able to get this right off of your CRM system. In this case, it's Salesforce. And it creates both efficiencies on the salesperson's time and then increases the ability to have higher quality interactions with decision makers. You're going to hear a lot about bots and AI and a variety of other topics. They're not going to make the salesperson's role go away. They're just going to automate those downstream activities that are wasting time and amp up the higher level activities that are going to add more value for your conversations. Now, Jill probably recognizes this because we actually did my profile with Crystal Knows while we were on the telephone. We were doing a call. She introduced me to the company, and Crystal Knows will go out and actually scrape the web for all of your social data, aggregate that, and come together with a very rich personality profile. And then they will actually even serve up custom messages and the way your buyer or your contacts might best acquire information. Do they like visual? Do they like short sentences? In this case, I was actually shocked that this was like 99.9% right on my personality. I've only shared the good stuff, but you can go back and find all the bad stuff as well. It's there. But you know, seriously, this enables your sellers to really understand who they're engaging with before they reach out, because your buyers are expecting that level of knowledge. They're expecting a warm connection, or they're not going to deal with you. So this concept here is really use the data, whether it's buyer behavioral data, personality data, research, to get a better understanding of the activities, the affinities, and what's going on and what matters to your buyers so that you can have more meaningful discussions regardless of what channel you engage with them. And Chris Morse was someone I interviewed. He actually uses a company called VivaStream. I don't know if anyone is familiar with VivaStream here. So it's actually an events firm, and they go out and acquire a variety of different data, like from this event. They capture tweets, they capture sessions, they capture blogs, they capture a variety of different types of things that folks do, and then they aggregate that data with other marketing data and serve up rich visualizations to the salesperson so they can go back to their executive stakeholders and, again, share information that they may not have even known. So your buyers are expecting you to know things as a seller without them having to sit down and tell you about their business. I think social is another great buyer-centric initiative that you guys could really start to focus on that brings marketing and sales really, really close together. So we'll talk a little bit about the impact of social. We did some research recently that showed that only about 31% of B2B firms have rolled out a formal, structured, scalable social selling program. And so there's lots of opportunity to do more in this realm. And the other thing that I'll share with you is that we're starting to see the data come through that shows that social is having a tremendous impact, not just in marketing, but also in sales. So a recent survey that we did shows that marketers are now viewing social as one of their top three demand gen techniques. A little bit lagging behind in the latter phases of the engagement cycle. I think that's going to change. But what's important now is that we're starting to see that ROI and those metrics. So it's not okay to say, you know, we've always been doing it the old way, we'll do it that way. We don't think we see the ROI in social. It is coming through. And if you think about it, the channels that we have sellers has used in the past, face-to-face, phone, email, those are very fatigued channels, particularly email, right? Email and phone. And imagine the millennials will not talk on the phone. So social networks and channels I'm seeing as very, very vibrant channels where you have the ability to drive forward your marketing and sales messaging, but also to extend and deepen your relationships and connections, because that's what social is about. It's about authentic connections. So here's some interesting data as well, which is 72% of sellers who integrate social activities into their daily cadence are seeing increased results, right? So they're 72% are outperforming their peers who actually don't use social. So if I'm a seller, why wouldn't I do that, right? It's pretty obvious. So we have a little bit of a heavy weight on the marketing side here in today's session. So if you're a marketer and you're thinking about supporting your social sellers, don't think it's a one-size-fits-all. You're going to have a variety of different sellers, just like you have different customers that you go to market to, right? And not everyone has to be a celebrity. We've got a few celebrities here in the room, Matt, Jill, Peter. There's probably some others. Not everyone needs to be. What we find is most sellers fall into the expert or social novice category, and that's great. The experts are usually the millennials who are comfortable with new technologies and tools, but maybe not as great with the art of selling. And the social novices are the people who in your sales organization who are probably tenured sales execs who really understand the dynamics of selling, reading the room, closing the deal, asking for the business. They may not be as savvy on some of the tools. There's a real opportunity for you to pair those two types of social sellers up so they can help each other. And then you've got your non-participants. And so I find those in some of the traditional businesses and industries that might be lagging where, you know, it's not necessary for them to social sell. So if it isn't, great. Leave them alone. Ignore them. Why waste your time, right? But if you're not in one of those lagging industries, don't do it at your own peril. ABM is another great initiative, and similar to social selling, when we did some research on ABM last year, and we published 4 reports, if you haven't seen them, they're really fantastic, we found out, surprisingly enough, that even though there's a ton of buzz about ABM, many organizations have not rolled out a formal, structured, and sustainable ABM program. They're sort of doing bits and pieces of it. And we understand because it's overwhelming. It's hard. But this is another initiative where you can really bring marketing and sales together, from the account selection to the account planning to the launch of the initiative. And I won't go into too much detail here, but if you think about ABM programs of the past, salespeople would often, you know, sort of go to marketing with a scribble down list of 5 to 7 accounts and say, here are the accounts I want you to focus on this year, and we want to do events and do some special things. Well, we're in a much more sophisticated world now where we've got tools and technologies that can do rich segmentation. We can use predictive analytics, and we can come up with a very targeted list that we should focus on. And so what we want to encourage marketing and sales to do is come together, use those methodologies, use frameworks, use those great tools that are now at your disposal, and also use the great qualitative and historical information that sales has on these accounts, and come up with a list together, and then stick to it. You know, don't just kick an account off to bring in a new account because your son plays soccer with the CEO of the company that you want to start focusing on, right? Those days are behind us. Let's use a systematic and scientific approach combined with that historical perspective that the sales rep brings to the table. So if you think about trying to have a successful, you know, social selling program or a successful ABM program, it's like any other strategic initiative that you'd roll out to your business, right? You have executive sponsors, you have a communication program, you maybe want to start with a pilot. In an area of the business where you think you have a sales manager who might be very receptive to the concepts, you want to make sure that you align compensation and metrics. You might even want to think about, with your top accounts, assigning a marketer to be part of the deal team and pay that marketer on account milestones and account growth. It's time to really move forward marketing's compensation downstream to align with sales in a meaningful way. So, you know, as we sort of come to the close here of this talk, I just want to encourage everyone to start to think about new, creative, innovative ways of collaborating. Remember that a status quo approach to going to market, whether you're in marketing or sales, is not going to cut it in this environment. It's not going to work with this buyer. So think about new tactics, new methods. Envision new strategies. Adopt new channels. And really go to market in new ways that you've never done before. So finally, you know, I really want to remind everybody that it's all about the buyer, kind of going back to the age of the customer and this key theme that we talk about, Forrester. Put the buyer at the center of everything that you do, and then collaborate with colleagues across the business, whether it's in marketing, whether it's in sales or technology, to deliver an incredibly meaningful experience across all phases of the engagement cycle. And you'll find that this is going to be a very, very rewarding strategy, not only for your own business, but for your buyers and your customers, not only today, but in the future. So thank you very much for your time today, and I hope you've enjoyed the session.
All right, anybody have a question for Dr. Shea before we take a break? Yeah.
I appreciate your presentation. It was very thorough. I guess where I'm struggling with, though, is the practical execution of these ideas.
Yeah.
You know, a consultant is a high-paid, highly trained individual. A salesperson typically is not.
Right.
So how does one scale that kind of approach of turning these entry-level people, not entry, but lower-level, differently skilled people into these high-level consultants?
It's a fantastic question. And, you know, at Forrester, we're real-time dealing with that challenge ourselves as we're going through a selling model change so that we can provide that consultative interaction that customers are looking for. But it doesn't happen overnight, and you need to do it in a scalable, stepwise fashion. But there's a couple of things that you can consider, right? Understanding that you can't go out and hire 100 highly paid consultants, what you can do is create you know, a part of the organization where maybe you have 6 to 7 consultants, solution architects, or however you want to call them, and you can overlay them against to support your existing sellers. So that's one way to deal with it from a structural standpoint. Another way to deal with it is to enable the existing sellers you have with different types of technologies. There's a variety of different sales enablement technologies that can help with guided selling, that can bring in rich data real time into presentations. So, you know, look at different types of sales enablement technologies to amp up your sellers and increase their ability to move up the value chain. And then I think there's ways to revisit your profiles on the new folks that you hire and how you develop and train them over time. So I think it's kind of a three-pronged process, which is really structure, tech, and sort of the HR component, training component. But it's a great question, and it's not easy, I agree.
One more quick question.
Yes, I think,
Hi. One question that I see a lot of B2B organizations have when it comes to enabling sales isn't just like the alignment aspect of it, it's more of like the leadership of it. It's like who's in charge of making sure that these processes and this type of technology is getting like implemented correctly within the organization.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that as to who's in charge of making sure that enablement is taking place?
So you do have to set the tone at the top, and I think it really does stem from the CEO or the C-suite, which is, you know, the message at the C-suite is our buyers and our customers are changing, and we need to fundamentally change how we engage with them across the entire life cycle. So there is some accountability at that level, and then I think with your marketing and sales heads, there also needs to be communication and accountability. I think the most underutilized technique is really embedding some of these things into the compensation plans of the rank and file folks. So that's where I think, you know, the accountability lies on your CMO and your CRO to start to drill down metrics and accountabilities that will drive these behaviors versus leaving it to chance, which is never a good strategy.
All right, one more round of applause for Mary. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. That was really fun. Thank you, Matt.